The content in this program is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any information or other material as investment, financial, tax, or other advice. The views expressed by the participants are solely their own. A participant may have taken or recommended any investment position discussed, but may close such position or alter its recommendation at any time without notice. Nothing contained in this program constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments in any jurisdiction. Please consult your own investment or financial advisor for advice related to all investment decisions. Don't forget to follow at Lead Lag Report on Twitter to join these conversations live. And check out the Lead Lag Report at www.leadlagreport.com. Use promo code PODCAST30 for 2 weeks free and 30% off to get access to award-winning research and anticipate stock market crashes, corrections, and bear markets. And now, on to our Lead Lag Live discussion hosted by Michael Guyon.
My name is Michael Guyon, publisher of the Lead Lag Report Group. Joining me there is Danielle DiMartino Booth, who I know a lot of you have seen in the media, has a lot of great research. But Danielle, for those who are not familiar with you, introduce yourself. Who are you? How'd you get involved in markets? And what's your sort of claim to fame?
It's a pretty circuitous route. But after a career on Wall Street, I ended up somehow being an advisor to Richard Fisher, who was the president of the Dallas Fed throughout the financial crisis. I prepared markets briefings that he then took to all the FOMC meetings and were a pain in the ass for Timothy Geithner and then Bill Dudley, because they kind of refuted what the New York Fed had to say about where markets were trading. And that was great fun. And when he retired, I retired, and I've got Quill Intelligence, an independent research boutique. People think of me as the Fed whisperer because I interpret all the gobbledygook that they say and put it in plain English.
Okay, so I put out a tweet, Danielle, saying that the Fed doesn't own the bond market owns. And I want to relate that to the movement in treasuries the last several days here, which has been pretty remarkable. I don't think the media is really covering how much yields have dropped. Do you think we've kind of started the pivot process? Is the bond market now saying that the Fed has overdone it?
I don't know that the pivot process has begun, but yes, I think the market is telling the Fed that they're overdoing it. And I think the clearest reflection of that is the misbehavior we're starting to see in the illiquidity issues that are starting to crop up.
Okay, and let's go into those illiquidity issues, because you've got these stories around these gatings with these private REITs. I don't think it's just that. I have a suspicion that Powell knows something that we don't, which is why his tone got a little bit more dovish, or at least less hawkish. What are some of the illiquidity issues that you're seeing that you think might be spooking the Fed?
Well, look, this is a much bigger story than anybody is talking about. It comes down to the fact that for the last 40 years or so, as the private capital markets have grown, we have to have context here, right? There's, at the end of 2020, the non-bank financial system was $220 trillion. The conventional banking system was $180 trillion. And if liquidity seizes up in the larger of the two financial systems, we've got problems. But that's never happened. The Fed has always come in and prevented private equity from having to mark to market. And pension funds have always been able to kind of wink and nod and move on. Commercial real estate has always been refinanced. 2023, largest refinancing wall for commercial real estate, and it will be until 2032. Markets right now are telling the Fed that if you don't stop, we're going to actually have to take our marks. And this is not something that Wall Street is prepared for, but it is being reflected in the severity of the yield curve inversions across the curve.
Do you think that inversion is going to keep on getting worse? I have a theory that they actually probably want the inversion to get so obscene to stop literally all lending by the banks. But what's your take on how the yield curve has been playing out here?
Well, they're not going to have to try too much harder to get the banks to stop lending.
Fair enough, right?
Look, what most people don't realize is that you're in the soup technically right? When the yield curve starts to steepen, that's like a validation. Hey, we're in recession for sure. As far as how, because what you're really asking me is what happens after next week? And does Powell have the resolve? And I think that he was a kinder, gentler Jay Powell with David Wessel. They were kind of two birds of a feather, you know, older, uptight white guys on a stage. And I think that markets misinterpreted his being polite as being irresolute. And again, Michael, nobody talks about quantitative tightening. And I just find that to be absolutely baffling when people are going, oh God, what gate is Blackstone going to throw up next? And yet we're not talking about liquidity depletion, which is ancillary to the rate discussion, at least as far as market participants act. But it's a much bigger factor as the rate cuts get smaller and quantitative tightening maintains its size.
What's happening day to day? Are Fed officials getting calls from Blackstone and from other major institutions telling them to cool it or telling them that risks are increasing? Talk us through sort of what happens in terms of the influence and the pressure.
So, you could theorize that it was a phone call from BlackRock to the Bank of England that, you know, knock, knock, knock on the door. Hey, you know, these pension funds are about to get these massive margin calls. That could be really problematic for you. And that was actually what prompted the Bank of England to move. So yes, the Fed is being bombarded by actors in the arena. And yet Powell just keeps plodding along, knowing right now that time is of the essence. And to me, at least, the quieter he is, the more calm he is, the more we should be worried. Because last time we were in this position, the Fed was getting ready to launch massive levels of quantitative easing. And here we sit with him. Remember, this was a former private equity guy. He's got friends on the street. Solomon Brothers years ago was embroiled in a Treasury scandal. Who worked that out when he was Undersecretary of the Treasury with one Warren Buffett? That would be Jay Powell. Jay Powell knows markets and he knows markets players. During the heat of the pandemic, he rescued effectively, right? He rescued the private equity industry by allowing the Main Street credit vehicle to encompass private equity holding companies. So they were bailed out. He's not doing that right now. So it's as if he's got his voicemail turned on by the way he's acting. And actions, of course, speak much louder than words. That's why we're all going to be so focused on Jay Powell at the podium next week. So I think that there's an inconvenient truth when the word fiscal is raised, and that is there's nothing that's going to happen during the lame duck session of any import at all. The Fed and specifically Jay Powell knows that he facilitated the fiscal recklessness that laid this, that sowed the seeds of the inflation he's currently fighting. He was complicit. It was his fault. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to let the guy off the hook. But by the same token, we have a House of Representatives that is run by the GOP. So I really do think that the issue of fiscalness is going to become a non-issue, at least for the next 12 months. And this is so unappreciated. At Quill Intelligence, we've been tracking every single month business income tax refunds. $135 billion by the end of this month will have been pumped into the economy inside of 10 months. That's not repeating itself. The state of California, I'm writing about it as we speak, the state of California is entering into a deficit for the first time since the Great Recession. The biggest, most populous state in the country, it's not going to be sending out more stimmy checks. Other states will not as well as we veer into recession. The lack of fiscal, I think, is, again, highly underappreciated, headed into the teeth of a recession. on the small business front, again, these massive income tax refunds are not going to be repeated. We might see a little bit of fuel into 2023. After that happens, you're actually seeing, in what little data we can track, you are seeing small businesses begin to pull back. You're seeing closures of small businesses multiply very quietly in the background. Great website, dailyjobcuts.com. They've got a right-hand column where you can follow every single small business closing. They track them very well on a day-to-day basis. We're seeing job openings absolutely collapse. People aren't talking about that. I follow that at opportunityinsights.com. Used to be Burning Glass. Now it's called Lightcast. They track job openings in real time. Paychex, a small business consultancy, their index on hiring of small businesses has declined here. And we've seen it on the decline for 9 months now. These are the things we write about every day at Quill. These jobs are going away. And we will see a bigger effect because of the private credit market that is now $1.4 trillion and private equity going where it didn't have a business being. And that's small and medium enterprises in America that are more levered than they can handle going into a recession without ample cash flows. So that's one end of the spectrum. At the opposite end of the spectrum lies your other question. And the answer to that is Carvana is a red herring of sorts, but it is also emblematic of the bleeding going on in the securitization markets. So we have seen a closure of asset-backed securities, commercial mortgage-backed securities, non-qualified mortgage businesses. You're seeing single-family rental companies begin to quietly liquidate their portfolios. We don't know what this Airbnb bust is going to look like, but what we do know is that there were no lending standards for the mortgages that purchased all of these, I call them Airbnb jocks, that purchased all of these rental properties. And, you know, I don't think they're going to be having a similar conference in Miami where they all sit and brag about how many properties they've got and the cash flow they're throwing off and the debt they're holding against them. They're crying right now. So the financing engine of the U.S. economy is coming to a screeching halt. And that is going to be extremely problematic because again, private debt went somewhere where it did not belong. And at the same time, you have the mother of all refinancing waves coming up on the commercial side, which is structurally impaired because of accelerated automation, offshoring of white collar jobs, the white collar recession, offices not filling back up, and the spillover effect into high rise multifamily going into 2023. That was probably more than you wanted to know. You're not off base. We published on this exact subject, Core Services X Housing. Did I say that right? Yes.
Yep.
We actually published a report on that subject this week. So what, again, I think it's dangerous what he's telling you. He is zeroing in on the one area of inflation that he can still say is problematic. Now, everything we're seeing in services surveys tells us that this source of inflation will also roll over. I'll give you one example. You know, you're seeing occupancy year over year negative for the first time since early 2021. We published on this last night. Hotel occupancy, that's been a stellar standout in the services sector. But again, I say watch what Powell says. Because he is deflecting by focusing on things that he knows to be false. And yet, because he's telling you he's focusing on them, that means that he is going to use them as a reason to continue quietly, slowly, methodically tightening. So I did not interpret mission accomplished. I interpret it, Powell is saying, I still have leeway to continue to tighten. Because this particular form of inflation has yet to be tamed. People interpret what they want to interpret because it's been more than 40 years. We've never had to mark any of this, you know what, to market. So it's unfathomable. Investors, I don't know a single investor that can even imagine what it would look like on the other side of marking all of this stuff to reality.
I made that point before, Danielle. It's like if you were to mark to market everything now, it would probably be worse than 08.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hello, listeners. Michael Guyatt here from Lead Lag Live. Are you ready to take a deep dive into market trends, risk management, and investment strategies? Then you need the Lead Lag Report. Our in-depth analysis helps you understand the financial markets like never before. And guess what? We're giving you a chance to experience it at a discounted rate. Visit theleadlag.report/leadlaglive and get an exclusive 30% off on your subscription. Don't miss out. Level up your investment game with the Lead Lag Report. And now, back to our discussion.
Oh, gosh, yes. Absolutely. Look, there are casinos that are, there are cruise lines that are wandering around the Caribbean, not full enough, and yet they've been in the market. You know, we saw 15% paper issued. Yes, this would be worse than 08 because we carried 08 forward with us through the mechanism of quantitative easing, forcing back open the capital markets to keep the zombies alive. So we've got that dead weight with us today. It's just more indebted than it was 14 years ago. Well, that's something of a constitutional question, because states are not allowed by the Constitution to declare bankruptcy. So you have to ask yourself, you know, what happens to the state of Illinois? We're seeing, and we will continue to see, one town and city after another declare bankruptcy. And that is an avenue that they can take to try and get relief for their pensions. Because, I mean, this is something we wrote about a few weeks ago. I mean, take a guess, Michael, at how much public pensions own of this $1.4 trillion private debt market. It would blow your mind. 68% public pensions. It will end up putting cities, states, cities and states in an insolvent position. But then you bring back a very angry GOP-led House of Representatives who is not going to want to have anything to do with some kind of a changing the law to allow for federal bailouts of blue states. Not seeing that happen. So that's where Jay Powell could get tripped up, is a major pension fiasco. On SOFR, you're right. I put SOFR right there with the reverse repo facility, with the standing repo facility, with the swap lines. These are control mechanisms. And very quietly, as the years have gone by, after the financial crisis, the Fed has taken greater control of the global financial system. And I would put SOFR in that bucket as being something that they view as being highly controllable. And by the way, it looks like after the year turns that we might see some relief from this reverse repo facility that also has all kinds of crazy people on my Twitter feed up in arms. So, and by the way, private equity, junk bond market, CLOs, leveraged loans, all of that has infected the European financial system. None of it has been tested, and the backstops aren't necessarily there. So you've got your eye very much in the right place. CBDC, look, when Jay Powell, again, he's a dangerous man when he's calm. And when he's asked by, Maxine Waters, who's been a big advocate for CBDC, when asked, when he's in the hot seat in Congress, he just very calmly says, well, you know, that's at least several years out before any of this can be implemented. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the New York Fed is working with a dozen financial institutions who would make sure that the CBDC, if it ever did come to pass, would be a role played by the private banking sector. So, I'm sorry, but we're not Nicaragua. Nicaragua does not have world's biggest banking lobby, and banks are not going to roll over and just give it away. Not happening. So again, you're right to say that it is it's a constant source of porn on my Twitter feed, but it ain't happening under Jay Powell's watch. And if Donald J. Trump couldn't fire the man for cause, I doubt that Biden can either. So you are right that being untethered from did I just use the word tether? Anyways, untethered from LIBOR is it definitely gives us financial sovereignty, if you will. But I think you also have to focus on the fact that the Fed is also spearheading an effort to centrally clear treasuries. Now, if you want to take the ability of any of our sovereign enemies, if you want to defang them, well, then you centrally clear treasuries, meaning there can never be a seizing up in the world's risk-free asset, which means we maintain and retain the world's risk-free asset. So it's a much bigger picture goal than what you're referring to specifically in the LIBOR SOFR arena, but the aim is identical, and that is to forever protect the sanctity of the U.S. Treasury as the world's risk-free asset. Well, I know Judy, and obviously, I would be a sound money advocate. It was overwhelming to see the economics community galvanize against her, and that tells me that backing, having gold backing, is something that would probably require an Armageddon type of moment in U.S. history that Neil Howe could better address than me. And again, it's not that she doesn't have a good point, and it's something that would certainly benefit the long-term prosperity of the United States of America. But to see how adamantly opposed the entire economics and political community was to such a notion, to move against Judy, tells you that there's no political or monetary policy will to push something like that through. Thank you for being a client. We appreciate that very much. But B, there already is deflation and disinflation being created. The double-edged sword is that in order to take inflation down to 2% and be that aggressive going into 2023, presumably for at least the first half of the year, and to keep quantitative tightening going, that just means to me at least more layoffs. And again, this is a situation. This is a bed that the Fed made, and now the Fed is having to lie in it. But it's the people who are most harmed by inflation who will also pay the biggest price in the form of, there's a bigger problem than, and he denies this, but there is. If you are the person who is no longer has a job, then you've got bigger problems than inflation. And I think that this is the pain that he refers to. But again, had the Fed not monetized every last damn penny of fiscal recklessness, we wouldn't be in the situation where they're trying to combat this inflation in the first place. So, but no, I don't think that there's an elegant way out of the situation. I think you're going to have more layoffs and more pain and a deeper and more prolonged recession in order to get that inflation down, back down again to that 2% target. And that's assuming, by the way, that a lot of these onshoring efforts don't necessarily pan out quickly, because the more quickly we continue to onshore, the higher the level of sustained inflation we will have to contend with as a country, to not be looking for the low-cost labor leader wherever that worker may be worldwide. So I'll take your second question first, and I think it would be the kiss of death for the Fed to increase its inflation target at all. I think 2% is too high, and got them into a lot of trouble to begin with. As far as the ability to continue to access funding markets, again, until we see a competitor emerge, and this is a buddy of mine talks about this all the time with his milkshake, but until we see an alternative, I just don't see it as being feasible or possible that the U.S. Treasury is in any kind of a danger, even if we end up having fewer. And we've seen a slow decline from the low 30 percentage points into the 20s in terms of foreign ownership of treasuries. That's been a slow bleed as it is. But I don't, and bigger picture, I don't think China wants reserve currency status either. So it's in everyone's interests, at least for years to come, for the U.S. Treasury to be maintained. To your first question, I will say this much. The recession could be ugly. The recession could be prolonged. The recession could be deep. If that's the case, if Jay Powell, and I get a lot of flack from my friends for saying this, if Jay Powell succeeds in breaking the back of the Fed put and truly brings price discovery back, and basically takes the advantage, the unfair, uncompetitive advantage away from private capital to basically rape and pillage the system, then he will have finally addressed income inequality in America.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Foodies unite with How You Dish. It's social media with a secret sauce. Food, the world's first network for food enthusiasts. How You Dish connects foodies across the world. Share kitchen tips and recipe hacks. Discover hidden gem food joints and street food. Find foodies like you. Connect, chat, and organize meetups. How You Dish makes it simple to connect through food anywhere in the world. So, how do you dish? Download How You Dish on the Apple App Store now.
And that's the surest way to have a broader prosperity in the United States is to break the Fed put. And that's why the powers that be, as Michael asked earlier, are probably blowing up Jay Powell's phone. You know, there was a law change in 2011 that, in anticipation of just this type of development, that allows the Fed to create a deferred asset. The liability would be the reserve. All they do is say, you know what, we're not going to be able to remit to you this year, but we're going to take 10% over the next 10 years, call it, of what we technically owe you, and just spread it out in lower remittances after normality is reassumed. So the long story short is, the Fed can do what it wants because there's loopholes in accounting language that apply to the Fed's balance sheet that no bank would ever get away with, but that the Federal Reserve is allowed legally to do. So Elizabeth Warren, is her head going to blow up? Yes. Does that happen often? Probably. So this is extremely bad optics. I mean, theoretically they can. Look, the paper's going to mature, right? Again, you could tell me it was $50 trillion. If there's an accounting maneuver out there that says it doesn't matter what the dollar figure is, the Fed's not insolvent by law, then the Fed's not insolvent by law. The bigger the number gets, the more it's noticed, and the worse the optics, and the higher the pressure. And I will defer to my mentor, Lacey Hunt, who is of the mind that in exchange for this recklessness on the balance sheet and racking up all of these losses, that the Fed should be precluded legally from ever engaging in quantitative easing because they screwed it up so badly. This would be a policy change. This would say, you tried it, you messed up, you can't do it ever again. Well, benefiting is a big word, and what we would consider to be, gee, you made a good investment, and now you're protected from inflation, and therefore your investment is technically accretive, ended up looking a lot like quantitative easing, because the size of the balance sheet was growing while there was a 3-month very long lag over which time mortgage-backed securities that the Fed had purchased when it was still engaged in quantitative easing settled. So this is what made everybody's head absolutely blow up. Now, that has quieted down quite a bit. And I'll tell you something about the TIPS holdings. You know, if the Fed wanted to create the illusion of rising inflation, but when it wanted it, remember, this is years ago when it rolled out this average inflation regime. At the time, it wanted for the public to believe that the Fed could create inflation. It sure as hell didn't want to create anything beyond 3%. But in order to form that mindset, they started buying a lot of tips. Ergo, they could start selling a lot of tips. They have not chosen to do so. But I'm going to throw that out there just the same. So, but if you look at the latest H4, and things can get a little hairy in December because of Treasuries maturing or not. But if you look at the latest H4, note to self, quantitative tightening is just about on schedule. And all the crazies on my Twitter feed have gotten to be much quieter. Thank God. Great question. So my good friend Jim Bianco did some very nice, elegant, simple math that showed that the average maturity of treasuries has actually stepped out quite a bit. So whereas during, call it the Obama years, we would have already been in the soup by now. We would have already been like, oh, look at the national, look at the interest on the national debt. We're not there yet because the Treasury has actually elongated the maturity profile of our outstanding treasuries. It will become problematic. It's not like we've got century bonds running around out there or 50-year bonds even. It will become problematic, but it's not an instantaneous thing. It's more like the frog that's in warm water that doesn't know it's going to come to a boil type thing. But it's not an overnight phenomenon by any stretch. Well, again, you're talking about rate. You're talking about the level of rates. And we know that, and Jay Powell has told us basically, that after this last 50 basis points next Wednesday, that we're going to ratchet it down to 25 basis points, maybe once, maybe twice, maybe three times. So that diffuses the level of rates problem. Again, that's not what's problematic for financial markets, because they're telling you that the level of rates is only going to get to be so high, and then they're going to stop and keep them there, quote unquote, until the job is done. So yes, this will cause a headache for Uncle Sam. This will tie fiscal policymakers' hands when and if the time comes for the next round of stimulus, if at that time, to your point, it's a hell of a lot more expensive to service the debt. That's going to put a lid on fiscal relief in the future, just mathematically. But again, I think watch what he does. If quantitative tightening continues in the background, that means there's no burr. There's no money printing doing anything as long as that continues. And it's a subject that he pretty much refuses to talk about. And that's telling you something. Yeah, no, again, this is where existential enters the conversation. Again, it asset price inflation, real estate inflation, very quietly, second home sales in this country have collapsed. That hurts. That is a massive reverse wealth effect for the wealthy who own these second homes. And they're also seeing their portfolios come under pressure. We'll see the next flow of funds come out here shortly, and you will see what's happened to net worth. Again, if Jay Powell pushes through with this, then the United States will no longer be where ultra high net worth individuals are born every second of every day. And this is a game changer. This is a game changer for our nation, because the wealthy have always, at least since October the 20th, 1987, when the Greenspan put was born, the wealthy have been the ones in charge, and they're the ones who've made the rule. If the Fed put is broken, then it goes back to being a price discovery mechanism situation where speculators actually get burned when and risk does equal reward. Those things have been anesthetized, killed, muted. But again, you're asking the most existential of all questions, because you're reversing the wealth effect, which means you're reversing income inequality. And that's a very big societal, they changed the damn name of the building to the Powell Building. They would change it away from Eccles. Well, we've certainly seen deeper inversions at the height of the Volcker terror era. As far as your first question goes, I think I addressed that a little bit ago in that it really is just accounting. The idea that we're going to have runaway inflation from here, given the fact that we're going into recession or are already in a recession, depending on how the National Bureau of Economic Research scores where we are, right? We are veering negative for the Q4, which means that they could go back to January 1 of 2022 and say it started there, depending on how the fourth quarter plays out. Against this backdrop, you don't have rising inflation because you have job losses, which means that people cannot pay up, which means that pricing power is decimated. And that's exactly what we're seeing in some of the regional surveys. But again, this is an accounting maneuver for the Fed. So how much pain can the Fed withstand? Theoretically, infinity, according to the law. There is no insolvency of the Fed. I'll go back and post the 2011 law change as soon as we get off this spaces. I'll post that on my feed so everybody can see it, what the law change is and how it allows the Fed to not be insolvent. When he's saying until the job is done, that is Powell saying until inflation is back to 2%, which he has been very articulate and explicit in saying, even at the cost of jobs, because in the long term, the labor market's going to be stronger. And he is telling you, maybe he doesn't believe it, maybe we don't believe it, but he is saying that for the long term health of the job market, that it's more important to get inflation down to the 2% target. That's what he's saying. As far as the Fed funds rate going away, I may or may not know. I used to work inside the Fed, and there's no incentive internally to take the power base away from the Federal Reserve Board in Washington, D.C., plus the New York Fed, which, of course, has a permanent seat. The president of the New York Fed is chair of the Federal Open Market Committee, vice chair, permanent vote. They like their power base. They like the fact that the regional banks do not have, but every 3 years, a vote, with the exception of Cleveland and Chicago, which are every other year because of when the Fed was established. They were considered to be very important economic centers. But there's no impetus to take power away from where power lies. And this would require, anything of this nature would require an act of Congress.
And I would say good luck with that. That's definitely not going to happen. All right, everybody, listen, this is my third space of the day. So I'm going to take a 5-minute break before doing my next call. Everybody, please make sure you follow Danielle DiMartino Booth. Always a wealth of knowledge. Thank you, everybody, for joining, helping with the questions. And Danielle, thank you for spending the time with us. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Take care, everybody. Happy holidays.
The content in this program is for informational purposes only. You should not construe any information or other material as investment, financial, tax, or other advice. The views expressed by the participants are solely their own. A participant may have taken or recommended any investment position discussed, but may close such position or alter its recommendation at any time without notice. Nothing contained in this program constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, endorsement, or offer to buy or sell any securities or other financial instruments in any jurisdiction. Please consult your own investment or financial advisor for advice related to all investment decisions. Don't forget to follow at Lead Lag Report on X, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube, and check out the Lead Lag Report at www.leadlagreport.com. Use promo code PODCAST30 for 2 weeks free and 30% off to get access to award-winning research and anticipate stock market crashes, corrections, and bear markets.